work going on in the WHOA's privacy area, discussion on UDRP. So firstly, just dealing with the minutes of the last meeting.
Yeah, this can stop, so go ahead and move for approval as presented.
Okay, do I have a seconder for that?
I second it. It's Marilyn.
Okay. Is there any discussion, any changes anyone would like to see from the minutes? Okay. All those in favour of accepting the minutes, say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay. Note the minutes are carried. Actions arising from the minutes. There was an action for each constituency to appoint one member to the President's Committee on the WIPO 2 recommendations. I believe that has been completed. Is that correct, Glenn?
Yes, it has been completed. It's been sent to Paul Toomey, and he has acknowledged it.
Okay.
Would you like to know the names?
No, I think perhaps just note them in the minutes.
Fine.
Don't need to go through them now. The next one is that each constituency was by a list of their top five UDRP issues. Glenn, perhaps you could summarise the status of that. I think you've had input from the business constituency and the non-commercial constituency, is that correct?
There's been input from the business constituency, the non-commercial constituency, and the registrars came in just before the meeting. So far, the common points are 9 and 12, which the registrars and the business constituency note down. And then the registrars and the non-commercials have 4 and 5 in common. Would you like me to just tell you?
We can probably go through those in more detail later in the agenda. Have we got anyone from the intellectual property constituency on the line at this stage? It's somewhat surprising that we haven't got input from that constituency, which probably deals the most with UDRP issues. So, yes, I guess we've got input from the two user groups. And I'd also expect to get some feedback from the intellectual property group as well on that topic. I suspect the internet service providers, the registries and the registrars are mainly in the role of implementing the decisions of UDRP rather than directly being involved. The next one is requesting, the next item from the last meeting was to request the board to put on its agenda the extension of time when we have 3 representatives per constituency. After the meeting, I forwarded on that request to the chairman of the ICANN board, Vince Cerf, and did receive a reply saying he believed it should be on the agenda. I've since raised it with the general counsel and also with Paul Toomey. I wonder, John Jeffrey, as ICANN General Counsel, are you able to comment any further on that, on whether that will be on the agenda for the meeting in Tunisia?
We did speak with that with you the other day, but we do not yet have that clear determination. But as soon as we find out, we'll be sure to comment.
Okay, thanks, John.
Bruce, can I ask John a question?
Go ahead, Marilyn, yep.
And John, what is the process by which you'll be making, and the timeline by which you'll be making that decision?
Unfortunately, I've joined the meeting with the caveat that I'm not clear on all processes yet, as I'm still evaluating some of those things. Dan Halloran and I are separately working on specifically how that would be added and if that is appropriate.
John, it's Philip Shepherd speaking here.
Yes.
You're aware in terms of the timing element of this issue, are you?
That's correct.
It is itself linked into the very meeting we're talking about. So,
absolutely.
If you know, it's not as if it can be sensibly deferred for later discussion without causing a certain amount of chaos.
Yes.
Sorry, Amalewa Rion has joined in the call.
Yes, I understand.
Sorry,
the...
that was Gabriel, was it?
Thanks.
Sorry, who just joined?
Amalewa.
Amadeo?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, a bit hard to hear sometimes. Thank you, Amadeo. Okay. But yes, we'll certainly note in the minutes that the council strongly suggests that it be on the agenda for the meeting in Tunisia. The next issue was the issue with introducing some of the issues associated with new...
Bruce, can we... this is Jeff. Can we go back to that for a second?
Yes, sure, good.
You said it's going to be on the... hopefully, it'll be on the agenda of the next board meeting, which is probably what... is that... I think it's mid-October? Is it...
it's the last week of October, I believe. Yeah, it's the meeting in Tunisia.
I thought they were actually having one before that, but okay.
Yeah, I believe there is. In fact, that might be correct.
So, I guess since we have now the October 1st date, I'll go on record in saying that the registry constituency is going forward with the election process of two reps and one alternate. So that we have by Tunisia, we're down to two reps in case the bylaws stay the way that they are.
Yeah, certainly I need to point out that to all the constituency members that at the end of the annual meeting in Tunisia, our terms expire. So in order to have a meeting of the GNSO Council after the meeting in Tunisia, the constituencies will need to appoint new members in any case. And then the issue is whether we're appointing two members or three members per constituency.
Bruce, it's Grant here. Just listening to what Jeff said and just what you've said, it would appear that the registries are somewhat jumping the gun in so much that you're noting that by the end of the meeting at Tunisia, and to my understanding the board meeting would follow the GNSO council meeting, and hence there is no requirement on the GNSO council to make any changes to its representatives, let alone the number of representatives, until after the board meeting. Would that be correct?
Well, if you're actually talking about the bylaws themselves, there's two separate issues. One is the issue when you need to notify to ICANN that you've appointed new people, and that's actually 1st of October in the bylaws. And I've actually sent a note to the ICANN secretary pointing out that it's unlikely that any of the GNSO constituencies will meet that date. The second issue is when the new members take up their role, take up their position on the council, and the new members take up their position on the council following the annual meeting. So certainly this council with its current membership will be meeting with its current membership in Tunisia, because we are meeting before the annual meeting. But in terms of appointing new members, the bylaws require us to do that on the 1st of October and notify those to the ICANN secretary. And I've noted to the ICANN secretary that it's unlikely that that timeline will be met. But I believe that the registry constituency is doing the correct thing in actually starting the election process so that they will be able to at least notify the secretary of their appointments at the end of the annual meeting.
But what happens to those constituencies that don't meet the October 1st deadline?
Well, I'm guessing that's a question I'd have to flick to the General Counsel, really.
Well, we have specifically discussed that point and are investigating it. One suggestion during a discussion was that, in fact, if elections were to occur before the Tunisia meeting, that there be an appointment of two, and then that there be a appointment of an alternate in the event that there were three members from each constituency.
Yeah, I think the question...
Yeah, I appreciate that,
question
I understood
is,
the timing issue, and that is currently being investigated.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. Can I speak again?
Go ahead, yep.
It's just a comment for purposes of the fact that the new general counsel is joining us. The constituencies are all extremely diverse, and our responsibility to our constituencies, I think every one of us takes very seriously, but in fact we all are very diverse within the constituency. And I hope that there is both the intent and the commitment to understand the impact, which may be different constituency to constituency, of imposing a top-down process like this. Regardless of the fact that it is presently in the bylaws, it is still a top-down determination that has a lot of implications for the constituencies. It is not, I'm not asking you to comment in response, but it is not a simple matter for those of us. We are elected representatives, and we have both representation responsibilities and participation responsibilities within our constituencies. And I hope that that is being really understood by those of you who are discussing this absent of a true dialogue with the constituency representatives who are very affected by this.
Bruce, I think the other thing just to comment also is that typically, just for John's benefit, it typically takes about a month to run an election for something like this within a constituency, because first you need a period of time where you seek candidates for election, then you need a period of time for discussion of those candidates and for those candidates to put forward their reasons for their candidacy, and then there needs to be a period of time to vote, given that this is generally global voting and you've got different time zones, etc., involved. So that's why I think that, given that none of the, I believe probably only the registries have started the process, but I think, Jeff, you would be able to comment on whether you think you'd complete that process by 1st of October, but I'm assuming that most won't.
Yeah, no. We're not going to complete by October 1st. Our goal is to have it done so that right after the annual meeting, which we didn't know until last week was going to be Tunisia, but be that as it may, our plan is to have by the first day after that meeting the new council members in and participating. But one of the things I do want to comment, just for the general counsel's benefit, and I understand Marilyn's comments, and, you know, look, I take personal responsibility on the registries because it's my responsibility to have made sure that October 1 was followed. We all knew that date months ago, and, you know, if we forgot about it, you know, that's really our fault. I know we want two members, and yes, we did support two members, but, you know, for let's not give the wrong impression to the general counsel here. This is not a new issue. This was in the bylaws since, you know, and Amadeo might be able to speak to it. This has been in the bylaws since December, and whether we agree with it or not, it's there. It didn't just jump up on us by surprise. And like I said, whether we like it or not, it's there.
That is correct, yes. We just need to actually move forward. So
yeah.
I guess that's, we're just notifying the council that's the general counsel, this is what's the situation.
Right.
And just to add one point, Dan Halloran, as the acting secretary, was notified earlier this week that there may have been some issue relating to the election before October 1st, and that's why we are, in fact, now investigating it.
Bruce, this is Ken Stutz. Can I make a comment here?
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I'd like to remind those who are on the call and haven't seen in the past that the Names Council did submit a request up to the board and to the CEO regarding this issue. And I'd also like to remember to those of you who may not have been totally on board at that point in time that there were serious discussions with the committee committee, and the original concerns to shrink the Names Council were based on the fact that they felt that
the names council wasn't as effective. But at the same point in time, I'm talking with three members, but at the same point in time, there were commitments made at that point in time to review the operations of the Names Council under the new structure. And frankly, I think both the council as well as the leadership, especially Bruce, has acted and really we've done a very effective job over the last few months since the implementation of the new bylaws and the new structure. And I'm hoping that the board will take a very close look at the way the council has been managed.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd probably prefer to stop this discussion because I don't think we're sort of preaching to the converted here. We're not trying to advocate a position.
Right.
But we're just basically because we've already passed a resolution on this in the last meeting, and all we're seeking is that this resolution be treated on the agenda for the meeting in Tunisia, and secondly that we need to start our election process regardless, because otherwise we will have no GNSO council as of 1st of October, basically. The 1st of November, sorry.
Chris?
Yep.
This is Chuck Gomes. I wanted to let you know that Scott and I joined.
Okay, thanks, Chuck.
If you want to call back at a later time, that's fine. Just let me know.
Let me get you from
That's okay. It won't be long before we're onto that item. Just the final action from the last meeting is picking up the action on the issues associated with some of the problems of introducing new GTLDs, particularly those that have got more than three characters. I believe the ICANN's Security and Stability Committee did put in a formal comment to the ICANN's process there, and indicated that there was an issue and made some recommendations in that area. Did you want to add anything more to that, Jeff Newman? On
yeah, I did. I wanted to thank. Some of the ISPs have contacted us since then, especially the Latin American ISPs. I wanted to thank them. They have offered to run a test for us on for the new registries. They've asked us for a list of currently active URLs to test with their ISPs, and I definitely want to thank them for moving forward on that. We really appreciate that as registries, and would hope that. Other ISPs in the other regions of the world would follow suit and help us out on this. And again, I just wanted to thank the Latin American ISPs for making that offer to us.
Just to follow up on that, Jeff, we're also following that line within Europe as well, so it should be spreading a little bit further, hopefully.
Great. We appreciate it.
Is there any further action that's required on this topic from the council?
I think I would reserve that till Carthage to see how these tests come out. And although maybe I don't know if any of the other, if Kerry or any others want to comment. I just want to say also that I'm still gathering all the rest of the registries URLs so that the Latin American ISPs can start their testing.
Okay, thank you. Do we have Steve Crocker on the line? Okay, I believe Steve is due to join the call shortly. Is that Steve Crocker joining now? Okay, what I might do then is go on to agenda item 5 first and hopefully deal with that fairly quickly, and that's on the who is privacy steering group and really just give the board a quick update on progress there. Each of the constituencies provided their top five issues to the who is steering group. The issues that attracted the most interest were issues surrounding data mining. Then the next issue was about disclosure to registrants on what would be happening with their data, which was issue number 5.
And finally, issues of accuracy were also identified as important by the business users and the intellectual property companies. Following that input, I put forward some draft terms of reference for three possible task forces. One is in the area of data mining, one is in the area of the data collection and data disclosure issues, and the third one is in the area of improving accuracy, specifically for information that is deliberately being provided that is incorrect. Out of those three areas, the first two task force areas attracted interest from the members of the steering committee, and the steering committee will be meeting next week to further refine the task forces, one on data mining and one on data collection and data disclosure. Once those terms of reference are completed, they will be submitted to council in time for the council meeting in Tunisia, and then it will be for the council to decide whether to initiate one or both of those task forces, and that decision will really be based on a resourcing question as to whether the constituencies have enough resources to run both of those task forces in parallel. There was mixed views in the steering committee. Some believed that there was sufficient resources to do both in parallel, and some didn't, but I suggest we defer the decision on that to the meeting in Tunisia, and that Who Is group can and focus on getting the terms of reference correct. Are there any questions or comments on the progress of that work?
I don't have questions on the progress of that work, Bruce, but can you also update us on the...
Steve Crocker.
Thanks for joining, Steve. We're just finishing off on a discussion on Who Is...
Can you also update us briefly on the status of the work that is going on at the higher level that Paul is leading, and I believe you are the representative here?
Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, Marilyn. Yes, on the ICANN website, Paul Toomey has made a statement about Who Is across the whole of ICANN, and he has suggested that there will be another Who Is workshop in Tunisia for half a day, and that I think is covering four topic areas. One of those is looking at the requirements for a new protocol that could be used for Who Is, and that new protocol is CRISP. However, that protocol still needs to operate within a policy environment, so there's still the role of the GNSO to actually develop the policy. And the protocol can be used to implement that policy. The other area, the second area, is doing some work on a review of the Who Is data elements. In other words, what the existing Who Is data that's collected, what are the uses for that data, and is that data necessary for collection? So certainly that work would fit in naturally into the second task force that's been proposed by the Who Is, by the GNSO Who Is committee. The third area is looking at work that I believe is happening in the Government Advisory Committee regarding the possibility of classifying domain name registrants, potentially identifying how you'd separate perhaps a commercial user from a individual user. So that's the third topic. And the fourth topic is what is best practice amongst the CCTLDs, especially with regard to privacy matters on Who Is. So those are four topic areas that will be discussed in a workshop in Tunisia. Also, Paul Toomey has called, is planning to form a President's Committee on Who Is to coordinate activities across the whole of ICANN, and he has basically ask people to send recommendations of people to serve on that committee directly to Paul Toomey as president. So that's, I guess, a summary of what Paul Toomey has stated in his memorandum to the ICANN community. Are there any?
Bruce,
yep.
This is Milton. I just have a question about that. I'm still a little confused. At the first part of your description, it sounded like there was work going on headed by Paul, and then you said that this president's committee is not yet assembled. Which is it?
Okay. It's both.
Bit of both.
Yeah. There was follow-up from after the meeting in Montreal. Paul called together, and there was two teleconferences that happened a couple of days apart, and they were only about a week or so following the Montreal meeting, where he had representatives from the GNSO, which was myself, from the GAC, from the ASO, and from the IETF, John Clenson, just to say what were the priority areas that came out of the Montreal workshop. Out of that, this memorandum that he's written to the community is really, I guess, the outcome of those two meetings, which I did actually report on at the last GNSO council meeting. I reported it verbally,
right.
The issues that were discussed there. Now what Paul's talking about doing is to move forward on these. He wants to hold a further workshop, and he wants to form a formal president's committee.
Okay, great. And is there any deadline for these suggestions?
Reading the communique, no. There's none given. But I would assume that he would probably intend to form that in time for the meeting in Tunisia. So I'm just making an assumption here that those suggestions should reach him before that meeting.
Okay.
Are there any other questions or comments on the WHOIS issue? Okay. Let's get started then on the topic that has been subject of much discussion in the last couple of weeks, and that is that VeriSign introduced a wildcard entry of star.com in the .com zone file and star.net in the .net zone file. We have on the call John Jeffrey, I guess, giving a position on what action ICANN has taken. We have Steve Crocker, chair of the Security and Stability Committee, who has studied the issue from a security and stability point of view. And we also have representatives from VeriSign to answer any questions. Before starting this item, I need to declare that I work for a company, Melbourne IT, that does supply services to companies in the internet, which include Microsoft and Yahoo, both of which have certainly been mentioned in the media as having some interest in the issue. Microsoft has had a solution for their browsers that redirects people to a Microsoft search page. That solution is potentially affected by the VeriSign solution, and Melbourne IT as a supplier of domain name services to Microsoft could be affected by that. Likewise, Yahoo has been stated in the media, and again I'm not commenting for either Microsoft or Yahoo on this, has been stated in the media as providing some of the, through its subsidiary companies, some of the technology for the VeriSign service. So, given the possibility that some may believe that I have a conflict, I'd like to step down as chair for this item and hand over the chair to Philip Shepherd, who was the immediate past chair of the Names Council. So I hand it across to you at this point, Philip.
Bruce, thank you. Thank you very much. Before we get into the item, then, perhaps I could also just ask if there's any other member of council or liaisons council who would also like to declare a possible conflict of interest, just so that we know and have full disclosure.
Philip, this is Carrie here for Dot Museum.
Carrie,
the might really become apparent during the course of the discussion, I may end up in a situation where things start to become uncomfortable. I don't have any prior reason to articulate conflict,
okay.
But I may get there.
Noted, thank you.
Philip, Jeff Newman.
Yep.
I sent around a statement to the council earlier. We ran a test for approximately a week several months ago. We do not now operate any kind of wild card service, nor do we have any plans at this stage to run one in the immediate future. So I just wanted to make the council aware of that.
Okay, that's nice. Can I just ask for 2 seconds of your time while I close the window to prevent some outside noise? Thank you. Are you on Dolan? Yes?
Philip, can I ask you, could you just do roll again? I don't know that or ask if anyone else has joined who wasn't on previously. I did not hear the liaisons respond earlier.
Right, and we had Thomas, I think, for liaisons, but nobody else. Is that Craig still?
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else want to declare a conflict?
Yeah, Philip?
Yes.
This is Ken Stubbs. I think you're all aware that I am a director of affiliates, but I've had no communications with them at all regarding...
Sorry, could you speak closer to the mic, please?
Yes. I think you're all aware that I'm a director of affiliates, but I've had no communications with them at all regarding this issue. So just wanted to make everybody aware of that.
Yep. Thank you. Anybody else?
Well, that's a matter. I tend to love everything that's wild, even cards, but I don't think this is a conflict.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I might as well. Tom Keller. I'm working for the company who has shares in affiliates as well, but I have not speaking to anyone from affiliates and not influenced in any way.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else?
Bye. This is Jordan Buchanan. I guess as long as we're being particularly far down the chain, my Registry Pro is a wholly owned subsidiary of Register.com, which is a shareholder in affiliates.
Okay. Anybody else? Fine. What I propose to do is just to ask John Jeffrey to give us a factual account of the steps that ICANN has so far taken, and then perhaps we'll hear from Steve Crocker, who can give us a brief summary, perhaps without going into all the technical details, of the immediate action and proposed further action that his committee has taken, and then we'll open it up for discussion. So perhaps I could ask you, John, to start off.
Certainly, and hello to everyone, by the way, as this being my first meeting and having a few comments already but not having appropriately introduced myself. I'm John Jeffrey, the new counsel who started about 2.5 weeks ago and have been coming up to speed on a number of issues relatively quickly, of course, including this one. In this particular instance, our advisory actually says most of what I'm capable of saying at this meeting, and that is that we have we've asked the IAB and the SSAC to review the implications of the launch of the wildcard service by VeriSign. Those reports have been created and have been posted on the ICANN website. We are reviewing those reports and are reviewing contractual issues relating to the issue. And other than that, I can't make any other statement at this point.
Okay, John, thank you very much for that. Steve.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation to join this call for this purpose. As has been described, I chair the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. Our focus of attention is, therefore, on those matters and not on a variety of other also important matters, but ones that don't directly affect. So we're not involved in contractual disputes per se or in various commercial aspects, but primarily focused on the sort of good order and operation of the Internet as it's affected by the domain name system. I think everybody's aware, we issued an advisory. It had some opinions and recommendations in it. We view those as a first step. Those are the things that we were able to say essentially right away. Right away, unfortunately, translated into a whole week, half of that I think, was due to the hurricane that descended upon the eastern U.S. and hit Washington, D.C. particularly. But it also became evident that we needed to look further and sort out the details and figure out what was important and what was extraneous. To that end, we have engaged, we were embarking on a fact-gathering exercise, which includes a meeting scheduled in Washington, D.C. area on October 7th. Details will be emerging shortly. That meeting is the middle of a three-step process that's part of that exercise. The first part is inputs from all quarters, and the last part will be then a report as we put the pieces together and make that available. We're very conscious that we are part of a larger process here. We're not a decision-making or enforcement activity of any kind. We're an advisory activity. And in that respect, cooperating and coordinating with other parts of ICANN as well as other parts of the community is all important. So, I appreciate being invited to this call. And let me make clear that I expect this to be a two-way street. We want inputs from you as well as others, asking questions as well as supplying answers, if you will, framing the questions. And our output, we expect, will be of use to ICANN management and the board, to other parts of ICANN and the various councils, to the technical community, and to the world at large to understand some of the issues more clearly. At least that's our intent and our hope. We, as a sort of preliminary way of structuring things, there are specific technical issues about what has been affected and what the consequences are. Excuse me. We'll try to sort through those. There are some larger issues that I think are also well within scope. One is the stability as a process of from an engineering point of view, that changes have been made and counter changes have been made also hastily, and this leads to a warfare of changes in the system. Anybody who has built large systems tends to get very nervous when you see a set of counter responding changes being made without a lot of clear thinking and testing and conservative care exercise, because that leads to a rickety system. That's if that isn't enough, I think there is yet a larger, if somewhat less tangible issue, and that's one of public confidence. Many people are, as we all know, are quite dependent upon the Internet and trust that it's in good operational order, and I think that we all have a duty to foster that and promote that and to provide the substance behind that so that the net is in good order. So those are some of the areas that we will be examining further, and as I said, we invite inputs. We have a mailing address, secsac-comment@icann.org. That's contained. I think we have also the variant secsac-comments, plural. That's contained in our advisory, and there'll be more about that coming out. Be happy to interact and answer any questions or speak to whatever issues that I can.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. For the moment, I'm sure we will have things to get back to you. So just to get my understanding right of where you were, essentially there were a set of technical concerns, some of which would have been in control of VeriSign, some of which would have been outside of the control of VeriSign because of the reaction, and it was that combination which made you want to err on the side of caution and call for the suspension of the service while it was studied. Is that,
well,
in essence where the recommendation was? Is that a
actually, let me parse that very, very carefully. We suggested, in quite in line with ICANN's own direct advisory, that change be rolled back and be suspended. There are multiple reasons
why that's a good idea. The counter-reactions is just part of that story.
Okay.
But even if there had not been counter-reactions, I think that the cries of pain and claims that various services had stopped working and the abruptness with which that was change had been introduced without community awareness and understanding would have been adequate reasons for us to ask for that. So it wasn't just the counteractions. That's just an added element and then raises the specter of an unstable system further.
Perfect. That's very clear. Thank you. And I'll call for perhaps just comments from council. And perhaps just I'll take a list of who wants to make some grounding statements, and then we may get into to some more of substantive discussion.
Can we
who would like to speak?
Philip, can we hear from Verisan before we make any comments?
Yes. I was going to...
I think it's... I guess, Jeff, Verisan is just Marilyn speaking. Verisan is here to listen. I don't think this is a hearing by any means. Are you suggesting that Verisan provide a briefing on what their service is?
I would like Verisan to react to what they just heard because you have posted a resolution which potentially could affect their rollout of the service, and I do think that this is something they should be able to comment on.
Okay, I'm just trying to structure the nature discussion at the moment, and I said I haven't actually mentioned the resolution word yet. What I was planning on doing, I say, was having a round of comments from council now, and then perhaps we can be a bit more interactive in terms of the nature of the discussion, and that would certainly be the time when perhaps specific questions could be asked of Verisan members here by members of council. So if you're happy with that, I'll go ahead.
I guess then my comment is a question for Verisan. Verisan, can you please respond to that? That's a question. Thank you.
Okay, that will be your question is noted. Jeff, who else would like to speak from council?
Ken Stubbs, very quickly with a comment.
Ken, anybody else?
Abel.
Mateo. Who else?
Milton.
Milton. Who else?
Thomas.
Thomas, who else?
I guess I'll put myself in the queue because I'll probably have something to respond to.
I think we ended the queue at the beginning. Fine. Jeff, anybody else for a moment?
Marilyn.
Marilyn. Anyone else?
Also, can you add Jordan Buchanan, please?
And Jordan. Anyone else? Okay, that will do us for a moment. Ken.
Yeah, Steve, this is just a real quick suggestion from a technically incompetent member of the community. It might be a good idea for you guys as you receive questions and comments to possibly excerpt or develop some FAQs or something like that that would help bring it down to a level that many of the people in the community could deal with. There were comments made about changes, counter changes, and concerns expressed, and I think people need to know what you mean by this or that as you go along and start absorbing input. Just a suggestion.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. Can we use you as the nominal clueless reader?
I'd be happy to. I started subscribing this week to Nanog, and these guys talk in code half the time. So, sure.
Excellent. Any initiative to improve communication in this field, I think, is excellent. Amadeo, you're next.
Okay, I have a question for Steve for the moment, perhaps also Chuck could say something later on about differences or similarities, if any, between this concrete service provided by Verisign and similar results that we can see in other ELD, Dot Museum on one side, but also Dot CX or Dot NU or SW and some others. Besides scale, is there also a difference in nature?
Okay, Steve, if you could just hold on reply to that, I'll finish this list off and see if we have some other questions for you, which you can perhaps take in one go. Milton. Milton, are you with us still? I'll come back to you, Thomas.
Well, good afternoon. I would just make
some brief remarks. You have probably seen the statement the LIC has sent to the ICANN board about this on, I believe, September 16th.
Yeah, I'm sorry, can you speak up, Beth?
I'm sorry.
Much better.
I was referring to the ALAC statement from September 16th, which we sent to the board and sent a copy of to the council. We have several concerns with SiteFinder and similar services, and I would just elaborate on very few of them. First, there is a concern that largely comes... There is a concern that assumptions which are hardwired in code and in minds are being broken by the sudden rollout of this service. These assumptions actually have even made their way into ICANN policies and into documents adopted by this Names Council. To just give two examples of this, the UDRP has a cancellation remedy, which certainly does not make sense when a canceled domain name is afterwards used by a different firm for commercial purposes. And to give another example, the Whois policy, which deals with the effect of inaccurate Whois data in relation to the redemption grace period, is carefully worded to make sure that it is possible to put a domain in a non-loan file state, but keep it registered. And this wording was certainly not written up with a status in mind in which a commercial provider would then be referenced by that domain name. So assumptions are both technical and policy in kind. That's something to keep in mind for the entire council, I believe. Second, the service, one moment, give the mailbox a little bit. I'm sorry. The service also has the impact of moving decisions from the network's edges to the network's center. This is contrary to what the internet is generally designed to do. Decisions are made at the edges where they can be controlled by users and where users have choice on how these decisions look, what these decisions look like. What we are now seeing is decisions being moved to the center. And this brings up the third concern, and that concern is that VeriSign is using a mechanism which redirects all kinds of internet protocols, virtually all internet protocols, to a server which can only provide something like a reasonable error response for one protocol. I believe that these, and the ALAC believes that these concerns certainly mean that the service should be abandoned and that such services should not be established in the future. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you for that statement. Jeff.
I'm going to defer to, I think Thomas raised some good questions. I'm going to defer till later on, after I hear VeriSign address the various comments.
Okay. Marilyn.
And I think what I will do at this point is only note I want to advise Council that AT&T has a number of technical concerns about the lack of notice and comment and ability to understand the impact on the rest of on the DNS and on the rest of the internet, and we will be providing those comments at the upcoming meeting that the Security and Stability Advisory Committee is holding, and I'll be able to publish those to Council probably before that as well, just as an informational piece.
Okay, thank you. Jordan.
Certainly. First of all, I'd like to pose the question, I guess. It's not been clear from the various publications I've seen from the Security and Stability Committee as well as the AIB whether or not definitively there are any RFCs or other internet standards that this, this product violates in, you know, either clearly written letter or even clearly identifiable spirit. Secondly, I'd be very curious to, I guess, just hear the answer to Amadeus' question, which is, you know, how does this product differ in terms of its impact on internet stability from existing top-level domain names that implement wildcards?
Okay.
And finally, my question is, to have some further explanation as to the chain of measures and countermeasures that have been referred to in terms of what various parties may have been doing in order to circumvent the service and what level of success they may have had.
Yeah, I mean, I might say perhaps that third question, although it's valid, may perhaps be better taken offline if it's essentially to do with technical information, which may be drifting a bit from our role.
Well, I'm actually curious because that's cited as one of the reasons that the Security and Stability Committee found that this was a bad idea.
Okay, see if Steve can answer that briefly in a second. Milton, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Right. Go ahead.
I just wanted to emphasize the centrality of this problem to the legitimacy of ICANN and its whole regulatory scheme. On the one hand, we have a public infrastructure which has a lot of compatibility relationships with a lot of complex parts. On the other hand, it is privately and competitively run, which most of us want to retain, and we do want to retain the ability of registries to introduce new services and to innovate without turning into kind of very static and passive public utilities. So I'm not... I think you should not underestimate the degree of outrage and concern.
Hi, this is Audrey McCordy from the GAC.
You're very welcome. We're just on item four, and we're discussing the VeriSign wildcard entries issue. Milton Buller is speaking.
Thank you.
I think that there has already been, in various quarters, calls for government intervention of various sorts, and that, again, this sort of goes to the legitimacy of ICANN, even though, in my opinion, it is more of a transitional problem in the sense that the original contracts do not seem to have anticipated this. It's not clear that what they did was a violation of their contracts or their protocol, although it's possible that the contract could be interpreted this way. So the main point I'm making is that we have to be thinking about some very fundamental relationships about how ICANN as regulator relates to the industry and to the public that it supposedly represents.
Yep, that's a very interesting comment. Steve, can I come to you now to address those three questions, I think, which are posed to you, which concern the comparison of this to other existing similar systems, if there are specific standards violated, and your insight into the add-on problem of the reactive technical changes.
Yes, and I think that there was even a fourth question posed about the relationship of innovation versus stability, which I'll speak very briefly to. So the question about Dot Museum and the other top-level country code is a very fair question. And I'll expand it a bit that VeriSign as well had a related service of redirecting queries that had that were unregistered and on their face of them had character codes that suggest that they may have been untranslated CJK, Chinese, Japanese, or Korean alphabet attempts, and they brought out a service earlier this year to try to redirect those in a helpful way. So there are multiple precedents, if you will, and that's a very fair question. I'll say from a Sex Act point of view, we did look very closely at VeriSign's prior effort, and in that case, we found it a very challenging because we wanted, if at all possible, to not make an issue of it, to try to understand that this was not a major threat to the good order of the Internet. And we found ourselves splitting, in some respects, with our brethren over on the Internet Architecture Board, where we would normally expect to have pretty close alignment. And... The bottom line there is that the impact of that change, although one could complain on technical grounds and sort of a formalistic reading of specs and expectations that it was outside the spec, that it was not very threatening. And further, there was a posture that was essentially a transition or a temporary implementation intended to help people transition over to the proper software. I have to say that we did not actually interact on .museum or on any of the other top-level country codes, but the critical words here, I think, are exactly the way, I forget who asked the question, but the question was framed, that it is a matter of scale. The differences in degree lead very much to differences in kind, and that the impact has quite evidently been very broad. We did not take a look at this at the very instant that it was released and say, oh my goodness, this is terrible. We in fact got involved only after we began to hear some of the consequences and say, goodness, this is a very substantial issue. So with respect to the first question, I think it turns very much on scale and to some extent on process. With respect to the RFCs, that's a question that is being examined very closely. There's a couple of things that are very important to say. The RFCs represent, in all cases, for all protocols, the best efforts of the technical communities to specify agreements on how things should work. They are not, never have been, and cannot be the absolute last word on what is permitted and how best to operate things. The Internet has proceeded as well as it has because of good practices and the degree of conservatism. There is a longstanding slogan about be liberal in what you accept and be conservative in what you send. And also other slogans about avoiding surprises. So the RFCs, although they are important, they're very important, and they represent only a part of the larger story, operational practices and good judgment and a variety of other concerns. For example, just to trivialize this, the mail protocol specifies how to send mail. That does not say that it's okay for everybody to send each person on this committee 100,000 emails. You would not find a particular line in any mail protocol that prohibits that. None of us would be happy if we received that much mail. With respect to measures and countermeasures, there are two that are very commonly cited in terms of the countermeasures. IFC has released a new version of Bind. That is the software used by resolvers that is intercepting the replies coming back from VeriSign and transforming them back into non-existent domain or error code 3, I believe. So there you have sort of different places in the stream where people are intercepting and changing what's going in both directions. And also we have heard reports that some Internet service providers are changing their routing algorithms and avoiding having traffic going to the VeriSign site. We don't have documentation on all of this. I expect that we will have, excuse me, more over the next couple of weeks. And finally, with respect to this innovation versus stability, the Internet has become the important and successful venture that it is precisely because people have been able to innovate. However, there is a certain amount more that has to be understood about this. The innovation takes place on a relatively stable base. And the IP protocol is the most important plank of all of that. There is a quite famous figure that's called the hourglass figure, where IP is sort of in the middle of that hourglass. Below that is innovation on physical transports. So you have a changes in medium from copper wire to fiber to wireless and all sorts of things. And above that are the application protocols of all sorts. DNS is very close to the neck of that hourglass figure. It is part of the core infrastructure. Many protocols and services depend upon the good order and operation of that service. registries, this is not something that I would have chosen as the architecture that we've come to, but the registries are not actually competitive. Excuse me. There is no alternative to who runs the database for .com or .org or .xy or anything. So in that respect, I think there are not competitive forces. We have competitive forces at the retail level among the registrars. That's a whole other matter. But at the sort of nuts and bolts of who serves up the answer to a particular domain name query, that goes to exactly one place. I think that covers the ground. I'd be happy to take further questions.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for that. Now, we have VeriSign on the line. We have Chuck Gomez and Scott Hollenbeck, I believe. And perhaps I could ask you to indeed react to what you've heard so far.
Sure, Philip. Thank you. Appreciate that. First of all, I'd like to call attention to a very good point that Steve made, and that is that their document is just a first step, and they are still gathering data, as are we. And we will be providing a detailed technical response to each of the items in that report and be cooperating with the SECSAC in terms of their information gathering process, because we think it's critical that these kind of decisions be based on factual information, as Steve indicated they want to do as well, and not on a lot of emotional hype. So we have formed a panel to help us do that. We will cooperate with the SECSAC, with the IAB, with others, and we continue to receive feedback from the community, and we'll be looking at questions and issues that arise through this. With regard to countermeasures, I'd just like to point out that there have been no countermeasures by VeriSign with regard to any of the countermeasures taken by others. We believe that that's an option that organizations can take to do things like that, even if it doesn't create a consistent user experience. That is something that is in, you know, part of the market, that they can do that. I heard that, I do believe that there's lots of room here for all of us to work together to create best practices for for services like this. With regard to other TLD wildcard similarities, there are at least 11 other TLDs that currently support wildcards. All of those are ccTLDs with the exception of .museum. Everybody's familiar with that one. And the two of those, .cc and .tv, are owned by VeriSign, and I'll say that right up front. .cc has been operating a wildcard since 1997 with no adverse effects and has provided a stable and secure service. And with regard to .com and .net, I want to assure everyone that domain name registration services, domain name resolution, are all happening today in a secure and stable manner, and we would have not wanted to do anything but that, and we will continue to have that objective. With regard to the issues that Thomas raised with regard to the fact that names on hold also go into this, are handled in wildcard, just like a non-registered domain name. We are certainly listening to what we're hearing from our registrar customers as well as others like Thomas, and we are looking at that issue very closely, obviously, because wildcards are in the DNS protocol and registration systems are not interacted there. It's a very different issue. But I would just, I guess, raise the one point that all of these things, whether they be UDRP issues or property issues or law enforcement issues or whatever, all of those domain names that were registered on hold for those special purposes were going into browsers where the same thing was happening in terms of giving information. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. I guess the one question, Thomas, and you don't necessarily have to answer this for me, but maybe you could via email, is I see that your comments are from the ALAC. I'm not clear in my mind what the ALAC is yet and how representative that is of the community, but I would appreciate a private response on that so that I know what that means. I think, you know, the whole issue, ability of registries to innovate and introduce new services in a timely manner is very critical, and that's something that can't be ignored in this issue, and I trust that all of you will keep that in mind. Final comment, and then I would answer any other questions you have, is that, you know, we were very careful with months and months of market research, technical research, testing, et cetera, of doing everything in our power to make sure that we were fully compliant with the RFCs. And we believe, without a doubt, that we are.
Okay, Chuck, thank you very much for those comments. I'm conscious about time. What I plan to do now is discuss the resolution. Marilyn Cade sent this to Council and Public Opinion Centre a revision yesterday, following some comments. I think what I'd like to do is further have sort of any discussion within the context of that resolution. The first part of the resolution is a series of whereas statements which sets the picture. That's a summary almost of this discussion we've just had. So perhaps, Marilyn, as a proposer, you could just take us through very briefly the substantive points raised in the three paragraphs of the recommendation to your resolution.
Hold on, Philip. Since you kind of glossed over the whereas clauses, and I believe this is an important issue that we can't really just gloss over, I'll reserve a right to talk after Marilyn goes. But I do have severe issues with some of those whereas clauses. So
okay, we could be in for a long discussion. Matt, anyway, kick off. We'll be taking a list after you've presented.
Okay, let me just advise both council and guests to council and the liaisons that I'd like to first of all just very briefly summarize what the purpose of the resolution is, and that is to establish council's interest and concern in the issue broadly, to show full support to board, the president, to the community, and to the Security and Security Advisory Committee for their actions to date, and to indicate council's commitment to participate fully in all processes to better understand the impact of the new registry-level service on the DNS and the Internet, and also to advise the board of the intent of council to undertake any relevant and appropriate work related to policy development that is needed. The whereas clauses are an effort to capture the history of what has happened, and I would like to sort of put them aside and suggest that editing of whereas clauses can be done, and that instead I'd like to focus on the paragraph below the therefore. The first one suggests that council supports ICANN's action to gather more information, monitor the community reaction, and the experience with the new registry level service, and it requests both advice from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and the IAB that would be an elaboration of their initial comments. So it is both to lend support to the advice that has been provided so far and to request further advice from both bodies on the impact of this change. It also, however, encourages broad participation by the community in the meeting that Steve, as chair of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, has noted. And I suggest that it is important for further learning and understanding of the broad community of this, of the impact of this service. And then lends our own support, the council's support, for the upcoming meeting. I then suggest that we request that ICANN provide a determination of whether this service is a registry-level service, which, in fact, as I understand it, would require as a registry-level service what I might call notice and comment, which, in fact, has been denied to the community. I take notes and heart from Chuck's comment that, in fact, VeriSign has been at work for months, and so there would have been sufficient time to have undertaken notice and comment so that affected entities would have been able to examine what the impact might have been and had the opportunity to provide feedback before the impact was felt. If, in fact, it is a registry service, I suggest that council ask ICANN to take immediate appropriate steps in the service until the required process is undertaken, and that in any event, that it is important to obtain a suspension of the service until the reviews of the service are complete and presented. I then go on to suggest that council pledge its work itself to work cooperatively and to examine what further policy changes, if any, and I think it is important to note, if any, may be needed to address the introduction of new services at the registry level.
Melody, thank you for that, that introduction. So essentially the substantive part of what you're saying is lending support to the call that came out of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee regarding a suspension and looking forward, suggesting that we may need to study if we can have a process suitable for basically avoiding this sort of problem in the future. Can I start a speakers list?
Me, please. Jeff, please.
Jeff, who else?
Milton.
Who else? Okay. Jeffrey, kick off.
Trying to think of where to start. I think, well, let's start with the whereas clauses, and then I'll go to the root of the recommendation. I think there are a number of things in the whereas clauses that are very subjective, and although I appreciate the effort of attempting to historically capture facts, I think it is riddled with a number of comments that on ICANN's mission and a whole bunch of other things that I believe should just be completely stricken from the resolution. I'm not going to go into it more, just that, because I don't think it's worth spending the time. I think you're right on focusing on the recommendations. But if those whereas clauses stay in there, you know, the registry constituency will have to vote against it just because of some of the subjective comments in there.
Okay, well then it may be appropriate for you to propose which clauses you'd like deleted and see if Marilyn is happy to accept that as a friendly amendment, because the whereas clauses are intended simply to set the scene. They're not attempted to state policy.
Philip, I would be happy to do that, to look through it and then table this motion for another meeting, but I think in the interest of time and the fact that I just got this morning when I came in, my motion would be to at least strike those whereas clauses completely and just go to the root of the resolution. Okay. But so let me comment on
Jeff, why don't I make a counterpoise? I mean, for me, the two most important whereas clauses are about the last two. The third one, which basically says the service exists, and then the last two, which say what I can try to do and what the Security and Stability Advisory Committee has done. I mean, if you're able to accept those three, we could ask the rapporteur if she'd be happy to accept these other deletions in the interest of getting support for the main resolution. Would that be acceptable to you, Jeff?
Your proposal is to keep just the last two
and clause three, which says the service has been introduced, which basically introduces the whole thing.
Philip, Thomas here, and respectfully suggest to also keep the various clause which cites the IAB commentary. That would make it the last three clauses.
I would be okay if the IAB one has published its initial concerns, because we all know that the work is continuing. I really didn't want to do this because I wanted to get to the root of the resolution, but publish its check. I'm sorry, I'm just reading the last one again. Well, Steve's still on the line. Steve, does that last paragraph accurately characterize in the whereas clause what the CSAC said that has been considerably weakened through the introduction of ambiguous and inaccurate responses? I'll leave that to Steve to comment to see if that is completely
accurate. Okay, Steve, have a look at that first, and while you're doing that, Jeff, we can talk about his points on the recommendation.
I need to scramble around to find a copy of that. I think it's buried somewhere in...
Okay, Glenn could forward your copy while we speak. Yeah.
All right, so then
I just want to make this really easy. If Steve can go look at his advisory, he will note that I took language specifically from his advisory. So I just want to just make that easy and hand that off to him.
Okay. Is this in a note that you sent, Marilyn?
Pardon me?
Is this in a note that you sent me?
No, it's in the resolution, which I forwarded to you, and I took language specifically from your advisory.
That's fine. So I can just scan my mail for things from you, and I'll find it.
If they're quotes, then I would advise just putting a quote in there and put quotes around or quotes in the resolution. Then I'd be fine if it's a direct quote, because that's actually what happened.
This is Bruce Tonkin, Jeff. Why don't we just put a link to the resolutions from those groups rather than try and paraphrase the text? Whereas the Security and Stability Committee has published its recommendations, and then just provide a link.
That's fine too. Okay, now on the actual resolution. I agree with Amadeo. I don't really understand number four, pledges its members support the upcoming meeting. I think one, two, and three are fine. Four is kind of ambiguous, and I think it's really covered by the one, two, and three. The request of ICANN to provide a ruling of whether this service is a registry-level service. Not sure why that's related to this motion. I think it's a completely different area. And again, I've already offered my comments on how I don't believe it's appropriate for the GNSO policy body to recommend a suspension of a service. And it has been done. So I think that's kind of irrelevant. But the last thing...
Yeah, sorry. Perhaps your take on this is different to my understanding. I'm seeking clarification as well. But I thought that was sort of linking to this question in terms of is a relevance to contract or enforcement or whatever. These are sort of questions which were raised a little earlier. Is that not the intent of that phrasing, if not?
That brings me to my next comment, actually, which is the last one. The last whole pledges to work cooperatively to ensure full opportunity to understand the service. Its implications, that's fine, and what steps are needed to retroactively addressing service introduction. I think that first clause I don't have a problem with. It's the second part of it, which a formal notice and comment process of introduction of any new services at the registry level, and then an undertaking of a policy development process. You know, it's kind of interesting that it comes from the business constituency, because, you know, from a registry standpoint, and this is my own, because I have not had time to talk to the rest of the registry constituency on this clause since it's relatively new. We as a registry cannot run a business operating a PDP anytime we want to introduce any new registry level service. Speaking on behalf of .biz, we've introduced several registry level services, including a WhoIS service, a WhoBiz service, and a BizLock service. And I can tell you right now that if one of the goals is to encourage and stimulate innovation, having a policy development process every time a new service comes out is not feasible at all.
Let me stop you there and see clarification from Marilyn. I read that differently. I thought what we're saying is we may need to consider a PDP about the general need for a formal notice and comment process. Is that what you meant, Marilyn, or was that... Or is Jeff's take correct that you're suggesting a PDP for every such thing?
Jeff, Jeff, you are misinterpreting what my intent was, and the characterization that Philip provided was the concern that I'm trying to capture here. And by the way, let's just be clear that PDPs are not slam dunks. I suggested that we present a recommendation regarding the need for a formal notice and comment process. I think that the introduction of services which affect the DNS are very different than innovation at the edge. And that point has been made by both Steve, I think by Thomas, and that it has been made by others as well. Support of innovation is an important aspect of ICANN's responsibility, but first and foremost is the responsibility for reliability and stability of the DNS and the Internet. And so certainly there's not an interest in micromanaging the introduction of services which are at the edge and don't have a profound effect on other dependencies.
Okay, can I? Because I wasn't finished, but I'd like to address that as well.
Yes, are you happy with that clarification?
This is Crocker.
No.
I'd like to add something quickly here.
Steve, muted. I'll come back to you in a sec. Jeff, carry on.
Okay, am I happy with what? No, I'm not happy with that clarification. I think there is a notice period in the contracts as it exists now for. To registrars for anything that affects those registry services in which registrars, there is a process in there for formal notice. Unfortunately, this wildcard doesn't fit within that. We don't even know whether it is a, quote, registry service under VeriSign's contract, and I think that is up for significant debate, and whether ICANN really has any jurisdiction at all, but I'll leave that to General Counsel and ICANN and VeriSign to sort out. But, you know, the way it's worded and the precedent of having this process not something that we at registries can support because it severely affects our business. And
of course, I understand that. I mean, I think the...
Do we still have a queue established here?
We have a queue, Milton. I'm going to come to you in a second. I'm still just on Jeff and receiving clarification on his points. I read this as that first we were seeking a ruling on whether indeed this was a registry level service or not, and presumably the last paragraph then would be sort of, and if so ruled, then look at the need for possibly having a notice and comment process for such things, but which would seem to have some logic to it.
Right. But we all understand that if it is a registry service, it's governed by the contracts, and as much as we might want a say in contractual matters, and we being the GNSO Council, that's not the way that the contracts work. And I understand Amadeus' comment in his report back, but you know, unfortunately, the contracts are what we all live by, and that's what maintains the security and stability of the way we registries operate and sets our it establishes predictability.
I comment. Milton, I was going to come to you unless Steve had something very quickly as clarification.
Yes, if you don't mind. This discussion is mostly about whether things are or are not a registry service. From my perspective, and I think most technology people's perspective, it's perhaps more useful to look at the lines in a slightly different way. There is a big distinction between changing what happens right down at the high-speed inner portion of queries and responses versus the registration process of when entries are added or what rules govern that. I think that the term registry service and whether or not something is or isn't a registry service is perhaps overly broad, and that you might want to look at the distinction between making a change to how the database is operating in its normal mode versus the process of adding or taking away entries to that database and what happens to services as they're redirected. So just to nail that point, there is in the current case, there is a big distinction between the fact that a wildcard has been added at all, in a sense, thereby changing the responses versus what happens after that. From my perspective, it's not a whole. It's a separate question about whether or not SiteFinder or a fortune cookie response is given. The first thing to focus on is the fact that a different response is now given at all and that it's an IP address. That's right down at the core.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. So one thing we could do, in fact, is on the second paragraph is just delete registry level service and just leave it as provide a ruling on whether this service is a violation of existing accreditation agreements, which will still achieve the same end without any other implication. I'll leave that thought hanging, and I'll come to Milton, and thank you for your patience, Milton.
Sure. I'm going to be calling for more patience, unfortunately. The more this discussion of Maryland's resolution goes on, the more I'm convinced that it's premature. And I agree and understand that we're dealing with fundamental issues here, and we need to respond, and we need to respond quickly. The problem is, we are obviously groping. We do not quite understand exactly where we're headed or what we're pushing for here. And at the same time, as I say, the issue we're dealing with goes to the absolute core of what ICANN is supposed to be doing. It doesn't speak well of the ICANN process that we are, in fact, groping like this, that we don't know what to do. But I would suggest that we cannot construct a resolution about this issue on the fly where we, you know, we got it this morning and now we're throwing words in or taking words out. Marilyn, I really wish you had taken a completely different approach to this resolution and had given us some kind of a stopgap that we could all support, saying something like, we are very concerned about this, we think it raises fundamental issues, we don't like it very much, and we perhaps request that ICANN, you know, make a ruling and that we, you know, announce our intention to create some kind of a PDP regarding relevant policy issues, but you know, to present us with 13 or 14 whereas clauses and some fairly sweeping recommendations that we don't really know the meaning of is difficult for me to respond to at the moment.
And, okay, can I
join the queue too, Bruce Tonkin?
I got Bruce on the queue. Was that Marilyn to respond as well?
In the queue, please.
Who was that again, please?
Ken Stubbs.
Ken, yeah.
And I'd like to be in the queue as well after everyone else.
Yes, Jordan?
Alec Wilson.
Okay, Alec. Anyone else?
I'm sorry, did you get Jeff after everyone else?
That was Jeff, not Jordan, actually, previously, but I'd like to jump in as well.
Right, okay. Sorry, it would help me if you would introduce yourselves rather than relying on my ability to detect every accent on the phone. Now, I was on to Bruce, I think, and then Marilyn.
Thanks, Philip. I really just have a comment, I think, from a process point of view, and I guess just picking up some of Milton's comments. I think this is too big a resolution to digest in one hit, and I think we probably need to spread this resolution probably over a couple of council meetings. But what I think we can do in this meeting is perhaps just pick up a couple of the very first few points of Marilyn's resolution, which is support for the current process underway that we... supporting ICANN's actions in this regard. We're supporting the approach taken by the Security and Stability Advisory Committee to seek further information, I think, on the 7th of October. So, you know, I think if we just had a resolution to support the action that's been taken so far, that would be a starting point. Then we could, if we chose, make a request to ICANN to provide us with some information. I don't think we have to pass a special resolution to this. I think we just have a request from the GNSO Council to the General Council of ICANN to give a ruling on whether this is considered to be a registry service by ICANN. And yeah, I think that's really just a question for us to the General Council that we put on notice, because I gather the ICANN hasn't formed an opinion on that as yet. And then the third issue, which is
What do we do in future? I think we should leave to the next meeting, and I think that's the issue that Jeff's talking about at the moment, which is the last one, which is you know, whether we should or should not have a policy development process and how we should manage that. I think that's something we need to start thinking about very carefully. It needs some thought, and then you know, we can discuss that in more detail in Carthage. So those are just my process suggestions.
Okay, that's very helpful. I was just scribbling down a proposed short alternative we may come to in a moment. Bruce Marin, you wanted to speak.
Well, I was going to offer a modification to my resolution to streamline it, but before I do that, why don't we hear from everyone else?
Okay, Ken.
Well, there's two issues that I have, but one of them I think Bruce already spoke to. I'm concerned about... Steve uses scalability, and I'm an accountant, so I use the term materiality, and I'm concerned in the future that if we're going to get involved in discussing policy development processes, there are significant guidelines. So I'm glad to hear that, Bruce, you're talking about doing something at a later date. I'm afraid we're acting rather rapidly from that standpoint. The other point I would like to express is some concern. And that is, the registrars held a vote, and there was an overwhelming support for their proposal, but their proposal is no longer in parallel with the proposal that is on the floor here. So hopefully in the future, just from a process standpoint, we can develop some sort of methodology to be able to at least get some brief consultation on an issue like this. The other thing I'm concerned about is these countermeasures that Steve referred to, and in looking at lists out there, there seems to be serious concerns about individuals taking countermeasures because they're not happy with certain things. So against all this background, I guess I would say it's a little frustrating and sometimes a little difficult to make a decision. That's all.
Okay. Jeff.
I'll let Jordan go and others. I think I want it to be at the end of the list.
Carrie to speak, please.
Carrie, okay, Jordan, if you go.
I could be a lot more supportive of the approach that Bruce has proposed than trying to, you know, dive fully into this issue. I think that, the issue of precedent for recommending strong action against something that, you know, there's strong precedent for out in the internet community. It's already been implemented by a number of TLDs. It's required in the ICANN contract in some TLDs. And, to say that this is uniformly a bad idea and that we should take action against it at this early juncture, I think is rather premature. So I think that if we're going to consider a resolution, it ought to be quite narrow in terms of its scope and generally supportive of the endeavor of finding out more about this before we leap to conclusions. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Carrie.
I'm a little bit puzzled by the notion of our needing to resolve to support ICANN in what ICANN has already done. I would have thought that to be a baseline assumption. And to be sure, we're supportive of the need for subsequent action for a more rapid resolution of some problem that's obviously in need of resolution. But I also don't see why the entire council needs to resolve about requesting supplementary information from ICANN General Counsel. Why can't the president of the council simply do that?
Anyway, I think you're right, I believe he did it in front of our very ears.
Are we going to resolve to have done what we have already done and to congratulate ICANN for having done what it has already done?
Well, I think the essence of the resolution here is actually any support in particular to the SSAC and its current recommendations and work, which I think may be a worthwhile endeavor. And as Bruce was suggesting then, suspending discussion about a potential solution to avoid such problems in the future to another time where we can thrash out more precisely what we mean by that. And I now have Alec.
Right. First of all, I speak as a user of the internet, and I don't like the service. but that's not enough to say that it should be put down. My comment or question is more along the lines of, if it's okay for .museum and .tv, why is it not okay for .com?
So I hope, at least from my perspective, that you shouldn't interpret that we ever said it's okay for .museum and .tv, just that it had not arisen from an attention point of view, and that, you know, let me cast all this in a more positive light. I think experiences and exercises like this help sharpen the issues and teach us something about what to be aware of going forward in every direction, from a standards point of view, from an engineering point of view, from a policy and process and policy development point of view, et cetera. So I don't know where all of this is likely to go, but it's not out of outside the realm of possibility that as we gain better understanding of this, there may be advice that does come back addressing the larger community, not just VeriSign or only the very large TLDs.
Harry, to speak, please.
To be in the queue also, Demi.
Philip, may I follow that up?
Yes, do, Alec.
In which case, may I suggest that if VeriSign is the most significant example, but .tv, if the .com is most significant, but .tv and .museum also exhibit the same issue, then this should be depersonalized and made non-specific to VeriSign. And the second comment I have is that I don't understand well enough, it seems it's not clear at this point, what the rules of operation for the registries are, whether this is a violation of rules or not. May I suggest that one of the policy issues that could be looked at going forward is upon renewal of contracts, that ICANN has the ability to enforce procedure and policy from time to time during the course of the contract, and not be stuck with policy that is understood and known at the beginning of the contract.
Yeah, indeed, useful. I heard Demi wanted to go on the list, but also somebody else. I didn't
Harry wanted to speak.
Yeah, Demi here.
Okay. Demi, off you go.
Okay, just a point, that there are some differences between what is going on in VeriSign and other top-level domains. From a technical point of view, we have a start of authority under each top-level domain. And what the registries does in this TLD affects their community, basically. Then if .museum community is not concerned about having wildcards, it will be okay for them. But the .com community is a much larger community, and it seems that this community is concerned with this action. And another thought may be that many top-level domains have .com as a second level. And if your users forget to append the top-level domain, this is resolved by .com. And this new behavior of .com brings a lot of trouble, or a bit more trouble in the case of non-existent domains. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to take Carrie and then Jeff and then Meredith.
I'd like to revisit the notion of scale just briefly. In situations where notions of mortal peril are critical, a distinction is made between risk and danger. Risk applies to the likelihood of something going wrong. Danger applies to the grievousness of the consequences when something does go wrong. Sports shoes are likely to fail equally regardless of the sport involved. A bowling shoe failure has probably accounted for fewer deaths than mountain climbing shoe failure has. And there is 2 years' worth of experience, at least with the TLD implementation in one of the GTLDs. There is an equal amount of experience in the CCTLDs, and perhaps this should be considered as what are, I'm sure, a legitimate list of potential risks translates into a more objective analysis of the actual danger that's being encountered here.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm agreeing or disagreeing with Carrie here. But one of the dangers we run into at scale, and one of the issues I brought up earlier, is in running a registry, we like to have predictability. and we like to have rules that we can go on that so I can advise my company as to what they can or cannot do. I think in setting any kind of number of registrations or how large a registry is completely arbitrary as to what the risk is or what the scale is. And, you know, this is a discussion for later on if this goes to a policy process. But, you know, either something from a technical standpoint violates the rules of the Internet, to make it really simple, or it doesn't. It's not if it's larger than 100,000 registrations or a million registrations, it causes concern if it's less, because that's not a way to run any kind of predictability of any kind of registry. So my advice would be that whatever goes forward, we study the issues as they are and the facts as they are, and not the scale of how big the threat is.
I have to interject here. I think that the key word is actually to study things as they are. Trying to specify a set of rules and then say those rules, once specified, are set in concrete, and we don't look at the consequences, is too narrow a focus. We do the very best we can when we set the rules, but you always have to look and see what those consequences are. I think scale is absolutely an important matter. I'm not suggesting that it's ideal to have a distinction in the rulemaking based upon size, but certainly events come into view as you scale systems up, and then one goes back and reviews how those rules have worked in those environments.
Is there Bruce Thompson?
I'd like to be in the queue as well.
Who was that? That was Bruce?
Bruce Thomas, in the queue, yes.
And Thomas. Okay, excuse me. In conscious of time, so I'd like to end the queue we used to before I return to Mowden, who may have something new for us. Bruce, off you go.
Just one point that I don't think has been raised, so I'll raise it. And I think Jeff alluded to it because he mentioned that the thing is that registries require predictability. So do internet users, so do registrars, so do ISPs. And a change without notice doesn't really lead to predictability or stability. So I think irrespective of, you know, there's two discussions. One is it technically the correct thing to do, yes or no? The other thing is, should notice be given of a change? And I think that's a point that needs to be considered as well, because irrespective of whether the thing operates in a CCTLD, certainly I know within the CCTLD that I'm familiar with, .au, something like this would require significant notice to be provided to the users of that domain space. So I think the lack of notice is something that needs to be considered as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thomas.
Bruce made my point.
Perfect. A nice agreement. Marilyn.
Does Jeff want to comment? Because I'm going to offer a modified resolution, and I think it would be important for Jeff to make his comments, since I assume we would then go to a vote.
I thought he had. Was I wrong?
No, I made my comment.
Yeah. Okay, Mario, off you go.
I have taken into account everyone's discussion. I will note that it is my view, and I have said this to council, and I posted in the background that I posted that the responsibility of council is about policy development in the GNSO, but it includes a respect for and understanding of the impact on any policy that is developed or exists today upon the stability and security of the Internet. That is, after all, a first and overriding principle to the mere existence of ICANN. I would also say that I am in agreement with Milton's comments about the importance of ICANN addressing this issue, and that, in fact, this issue does go to the very core of ICANN's existence, but it is not my intent to capture that issue in this resolution. That is a broader issue that has to be thought about totally separately from this. I would propose to strike the first two clauses completely, to keep the third clause, which is intended to be a factual statement, and draws from language from the ICANN advisory, and to move then to the last three whereises, which are intended to be factual statements, and to modify them according to the comments which have been made. So the clause that reads, whereas the IAB commentary published if architectural concerns, blah, 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 should be modified to insert Jeff's suggested change initial. It would now read, whereas the IAB commentary published its initial, and then continue as it is. The last whereas should be modified to say, whereas the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, 22 September 2003, has published its recommendations and to insert related to service, and maybe we can put a published its recommendations and then put the site for the link. And not include any of the text that is presently there, although that text was largely taken from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee's statement. That will simplify it, and it alleviates any concern that Jeff should have about any the use of any words that might be viewed as interpretive. I would then propose to modify below the line the three recommendations as follows. The first recommendation is headed by Supports ICANN's Action. I would propose to strike item 4 and keep items 1, 2, 3 as they are. I would propose to strike entirely the next section in its entirety, and to which used to be headed Request that ICANN, so we would strike 1 and 4 there. God knows how I got my numbering. And instead to refer that to ICANN as a separate request from the Chair of Council that would be stricken from the resolution. I would propose to modify the last section as follows. Pledges to, and keep only part of the language, work cooperatively to ensure full opportunity to fully understand the service, its implications for the DNS, and any implications for the need for policy development within the scope of the GNSO. That is a modification which limits and refines the call to action for a PDP and clarifies that any PDP would be undertaken within the scope of the GNSO. That seems obvious, but it may be important to others to have it stated.
Okay, so to summarize then, we're going to keep the third whereas clause. We've got the last three whereas clauses incorporating appropriate links now to the recommendations. We've taken out item 4, the first recommendation. We've taken out altogether the second paragraph, and we are amending the last paragraph to work cooperatively to ensure full opportunity to fully understand the service implications of the DNS and any implications within the scope of the GNSO. Is that correct?
I said any implications, sorry, for the need for policy development within the scope of the GNSO.
For the need for policy development within the scope of the GNSO. Does that sound like a generally acceptable slimmed down resolution for everybody? Quick round of comments.
Philip, it's Jeff. It sounds, I'm trying to picture it because there were a lot of changes made. It sounds a lot more acceptable, but I would request doing this by an, because we can't picture it, doing it by an email vote. Give us maybe someone set a couple of days to do the vote. We can read it. We can look at it, make any other further comments.
It's, well, I mean, I'd rather try and solve it today because that way we do the job. I mean, I think to be fair, what Marilyn went down was the entire set of problems that you made, and she seems to have adapted her resolution to suit. So I'm a little concerned you're still worried.
I'm not necessarily worried. I just can't see it in front of me, and I'm just asking for a couple of days. You can set to just vote via email so that we can see it in front of us and vote on it. Like I said, I really appreciate Marilyn's efforts to slim it down to something that is much more palatable, but again, I'd be voting on a resolution that I don't have in front of me.
Okay, this is Amadeo. I sympathize with this position because also it was somehow difficult for me to follow that on the fly. But, you know, a couple of days perhaps too much to read three paragraphs. I have enough with a couple of hours. So perhaps setting a 24-hour timeline for voting, it's more than enough.
I have to agree with Amadeo. This is Milton. I would really want to take action here. I think it's important. I think the resolution is weaker in some respects than it could be, but I want to see something in front of me in writing.
Philip, excuse me. I am posting an edited version right now to council. Okay, if you can give me 1 minute, I will post the completely edited version to you.
Sorry, Marilyn, it's Grant here. Not all of us are online. We're actually on a single phone line.
Bruce, just clarification on where we normally are. If we were to take an email vote on this, we would then be able to pass the results of that vote to ICANN to let them know what we thought, and we would then simply technically have to ratify that at our subsequent meeting. Would that be the process? Philip? Bruce, are you with us?
Yeah, Philip, it's Stubbs. Maybe you should ask John that question.
I can ask John that question, indeed, yes. John, do you know the answer? John, are you with us?
I'm sorry, Philip, can you restate the question?
I was asking, the problem with email voting on council, as you know, is that technically it's not a resolution until we've had a meeting where we can all hear or see each other and voted on it. So if we were to email vote, we could hopefully send the results of that email vote as soon as it's known to ICANN to make it public, but technically it wouldn't be a resolution of the council until our next meeting when we would ratify the result.
I think this is a limitation for the legal of the ICANN Corporation in California, but if this is the case, that's what something I want to challenge. I think we should change that.
You had your opportunity when the bylaws were being rewritten. I think it was a suggestion that came from this group, actually, but it didn't happen.
Philip, I'm sorry, I need to ask a point of clarification. I somehow was operating under the assumption that was a vote on election. And I think we went through this debate, and it was clarified that this affects all resolutions of council and all votes of council.
Bruce.
Yeah, basically, the council has a set of rules and procedures, and those internal rules and procedures require an email vote. I think it requires 14 days from memory, and then it needs to be ratified at a meeting of council.
Okay, I am just sending this to those of you who are online because I think it is a problem to wait for that period of time. And I did make every effort to take into account all of the concerns that were expressed.
Have you sent that to the list, Marilyn?
I am doing that right now. I'm just going to tell you all that I am not in agreement with many of the edits that you have made, but in the spirit of trying to do what is best for ICANN and what represents something that I hope can be broadly supported, I have made a huge number of changes. And I think it's coming to the list, and perhaps for those who are not on, we can very slowly read out the two sections where there are major changes, because they're really only, other than complete delete, there are only changes in the last whereas clause and in the last statement under Pledge of Two. So this is not a huge amount of reading.
Well, I'd agree with that. I mean, I think it's worth trying to put to the vote, and if that causes a problem, so be it. But if Council allows, I'll take you through how the resolution now stands. We have a total of 1, 2, 3, 4 whereas clauses only, which is existing clause number 3, whereas VeriSign introduced a wildcard registry service, etc.
If you don't mind, this is Crocker. I think it's time for me to drop off.
Of course, Steve. Please do. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you all very much, and we look forward to continued interaction on this.
Thank you. Perfect. Thank you.
Also, Philip, can you read the et cetera? I'm sorry. Just that would help.
Okay. Whereas on September 15, 2003, VeriSign Registry introduced a wild card registry service into .com and .net zones that creates a registry synthesized address record in response to lookups for domain names that are not present in the zone. This registry service changes the routing of traffic by directing traffic that would otherwise result in a no domain notification to the sender to a VeriSign-operated website with search results and links to paid advertisements.
That is a direct lift from the ICANN advisory in language, just so people know I didn't make that up.
Thank you. The next whereas clause is existing whereas clause 3 from the end. Whereas the IAB commentary published its initial concerns on the use of DNS wildcards on 19 September 2003, followed by the URL. Whereas VeriSign Registry on 21st September responded to Paul Toomey, acknowledging ICANN's advisory and declining to suspend the service until they had an opportunity to collect and review available data. Next, whereas the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, 22nd September, has published its recommendations, link to the URL, and then we come to the resolution. Therefore, the GNSO Council supports ICANN's actions to 1. Monitor community reaction and experiences with the new registry service. 2. Request advice from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and from the IAB on the impact of change introduced by the registry service. 3. Encourages broad participation by the community in the upcoming meeting hosted by the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. And then we go to pledges 2. Work cooperatively to ensure full opportunity to fully understand the service, its implications for the DNS, and any implications for the need for policy development within the scope of the GNSO.
This is Amadeo. While I agree with this resolution, I already got that by email, which is easier to follow. I think that it misses the main point. And the main point is timely action. We have something on the table, and I would prefer to have the GNSO Council asking VeriSign to suspend this service until, you know, a resolution of this is taken in the next 1 or 2 weeks.
Can I comment on that after?
Yes, Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, 2 comments. 1, first on the motion itself. If we could change, Marilyn, if as an amendment, anytime you say registry service, since that is a defined term in the contracts, which we don't know if it is, can we just say this wildcard service? Anywhere it says that? That's what the ICANN advisory says as well. It doesn't use registry service. Just to make it more in line.
Okay, that's changes in the first whereas clause. I presume that's okay, Marilyn?
That's acceptable, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
With Amadeo's point, Amadeo, ICANN's already asked them to suspend the service. I've said this on the list, I don't believe it's within the GNSO role to ask a registry to suspend the service, so I would certainly object that change.
Well, the GNSO role is to channel the recommendations of the community, and perhaps the community is completely wrong, but I couldn't follow the whole thing and the whole amount of people really complaining from many different angles of this and asking ICANN and us for some immediate action.
Amadeo, can I respond to your question? I was suggesting to strike the request in the resolution, but I was suggesting that the chair of the council, in essence, make the request to ICANN that is now embodied in the request section that we deleted, that the chair of the council ask ICANN to provide a ruling on whether the service is a registry-level service. I think what you are saying is that the resolution should include a recommendation that ICANN obtain a suspension of the service until the reviews are completed. Is that right?
Yes, but not only that. I repeat, I think that all of us have been consulting with different constituencies within ICANN and watching what happens outside of ICANN. And we are not a policy decision-making body. We are simply, the voice of the general top-level domain community in the ICANN process.
my constituency if I did not return from this meeting with a resolution that calls for some definitive, or at least expresses our support for some definitive action regarding the wildcard service. And I think we're going to look pretty toothless unless we do that. And I can stay on this for...
Why don't we simply make it an insertion of... a revised second section, which would be support through the existing the initial recommendations of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee.
No, I think it's I think that's correct, because the Security Committee does actually recommend the temporary suspension of the service, I believe.
Exactly.
I was thinking about something, Milton and Amadeo, others, let me... So if we would say we could say advises ICANN that many constituencies and communities have expressed strong concern about the wildcard service and supports the initial recommendations of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee.
Could I suggest, in the interest of time and brevity and understanding, Marilyn, we simply change the last pledges to pledges one, support the SSAC's recommendations,
okay.
And pledges two, the existing new wording we have.
Yes, that would be good.
Excellent. Is there any further discussion on that, or can we move to a vote on our slimmed down proposal?
Sorry, can you just clarify you said two, the existing new wording, I didn't quite catch that.
Yes, the final wording then of the last paragraph now reads, pledges two, one, support the recommendation of the Security and Stability Advisory Committee of 22nd September 2003 to work cooperatively to ensure full opportunity to fully understand the service, its implications for the DNS, and any implications for the need for policy development within the scope of the GNSO.
Yeah, I'll support that.
Right. Excellent. I'd like to move to a vote in that case, if I may, please. We'll have a roll call vote. So Glenn, pencil at the ready, please. Let me start with the proposer of the vote, Marilyn Cage, your vote.
I vote in support.
Grant.
I support.
Thank you. Any member of the intellectual property constituency here? I thought not. Milton.
Support, and I have a proxy for Yong Hui Chung.
Perfect. Support is what I take it.
Right.
Yeah. Ken, your vote.
Support.
Bruce.
Support.
Tom.
Support.
Tony Holmes.
Support, and I'd like to check whether Tony Harris and Greg Ruth are on the call.
I'm on the call. Greg Ruth.
Greg, your vote.
Four.
Tony Harris on the call.
I have a proxy for Tony if he isn't here.
Okay, cast your proxy.
Yes, four.
Thank you. Jeff.
Because of that last addition, I'm going to just abstain.
Okay. Carrie.
Abstain.
Jordan.
Yeah, I'm with Jeff. I'm going to have to abstain on this one.
Okay. Glenn, how is your counting going there? We have one, two. I'm voting yes.
Need to count the nominated.
I beg your pardon. I've got, yes, I've got my old list here and I don't have the independents on it. Demi, your vote.
I support.
My apologies. Alec, your vote.
I support.
Amadeo, your vote.
I support.
Thank you very much. That's all voting members, I believe. There we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 single votes.
17, 4. Therefore, the motion carries, basically.
Six abstentions, yeah. So the motion is carried. Thank you very much. I'd like to end this item now and hand over for the rest of the meeting to our chairman, Bruce.
Okay, well, I think the only item of the agenda that we haven't covered is the UDRP, and I think what I'd like to do is request those constituencies that haven't yet responded on their top five issues to do so, so that for the next meeting in Carthage we can move forward on trying to identify whether we want to go forward with policy development with the UDRP.
Okay. And perhaps if we get that in time, Glenn could see where the main points of agreement are, and would have some sort of matrix as to where we all agree on certain points.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Bruce, this is Audrey McQuaid from the GAC.
Yes, Audrey.
One question. The GAC GTLD working group is wondering if the GNSO Council would be interested in having a joint meeting in Carthage the way we did in Montreal. We obviously don't need an answer now, but I just wanted to put it out there for council members' consideration.
Yes. I mean, one thing you might consider doing is whether you'd like to narrow it to a meeting with the Who Is Committee of GAC, given that the GNSO is developing terms of reference for task forces in the area of Who Is. That may be more productive, but I don't think there'd be a problem meeting with the GTLD committee as well.
I'll certainly ask the Lewis committee also then.
Yeah, Bruce, it's Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn.
Before we narrow it, as important as Who is, I think there may be, perhaps we should just do a joint sort of comparison of agenda items and assess what seems to be... whether it really is appropriate to focus just on Who Is, or if there are other agenda items.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was trying to think of, what the other agenda items would be at the moment, because what we normally do is update them on what policy development we're doing, and at that stage we haven't really initiated anything else since.
We have not, but I think there may be an issue where we may not have initiated policy but might be of interest to both to discuss, and that would be the activity that is going on with this that does have a strong impact and implication for ICANN.
The activity where, sorry, Marilyn?
Going on at the World Summit for the Impact.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think what we should do is schedule some time to have that meeting, as you suggest. And the other thing that I'd like to suggest is, it's a separate meeting, but a meeting perhaps between the GNSO Who Is steering group and the GAC Who Is group.
Well, I'll certainly forward that on to the GAC Who Is group.
Just Audrey, also Philippa, just a suggestion in terms of timetabling, in order to best help sort of availabilities and overlaps. The Monday the 27th would probably be a very good day for council if that fitted in with your own 2 or 3 days of meetings.
Monday, that's the 27th?
Yeah.
27th would be a good time for council. And so let me just confirm one thing. So the meeting would be between the GAC Who Is group and the GNSO Who Is group, would be the Who Is one, and also a general one between the GNSO and the GAC.
That's what I'm suggesting, yes.
Okay. Sure. I will propose both of these, including the Monday, October 27th date. Morning or afternoon is preferable for you guys.
I don't think it matters. I'm just aware there are not constituency meetings and not a council meeting on that day.
Well, wait. There may not be, but can we check the agenda? Because some of us do have other responsibilities as well. So can we quickly check an agenda and get back to you through Bruce for scheduling purposes?
Yeah, what was the suggestion of... What was the suggested time that you had, Phil?
I was simply suggesting the Monday, because the Tuesday is the constituency meeting day.
Yeah. And I think that's a reasonable start.
And the Wednesday is the council, so
it's
likely
to
take away less of us, whatever else is happening.
That is true, but there are other meetings being scheduled, including if Thomas is still on the phone at some point and at large, an outreach meeting. There's an ISOC outreach meeting. And so there are other things that are going on Monday that some of us will be involved in.
Yeah, there is actually an at-large workshop scheduled for Monday the 27th. I don't know whether it's all day, but it's there, yeah.
I don't know that either.
Hello?
So perhaps we could come back to you quickly with time issues, Bruce, and then there could be some coordination back. Is that
certainly, I can help coordinate that once we have more data. Yeah.
thanks. And I'll just pass on in the meantime to the, these two GAC groups in principle that there's interest in meeting, and then we can do the details later.
Okay. If there's no other business, then thank everybody for attending.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, this is Yangon Lee. I joined in late and I didn't have a chance to introduce myself.
Thank you very much indeed for telling me, Yong Lee. I put you down on the attendance list.
Thank you.
Before
you go, it's Marilyn.
I'm just
sending the revised resolution off to Peter and asking him to post it within the CCTLD community as an informational item.
I can do that.
Yeah, if you will give me your email, I will send it to you instead.
Well, actually, I do receive the council.
Oh, good. Yeah,
mail, and I just received your, the revised resolution. So
but I need
to send
it to you. I need to send the revised version that we just made, right? Because we just modified even the version that we voted on.
I'll wait for that version. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to post it right now. And Glenn, you were probably taking comments. I'm going to post it right now as what I captured. I think what I'm going to do is post it to you, Glenn, so that you and I can just look and Philip, and then you can post it to council. Is that okay? So it'll come
fine,
from
I'll
council.
Do that, Marilyn. Yes.
Okay, it'll come from council, Young, in just a few minutes.
Okay, so as soon as it comes up on the council list, I'll...
That's wonderful.
Order,
and
yes.
would you just... separately communicate with Peter. I had told him that for the cross-constituency meeting, we would like to coordinate again for the cross-constituency meeting. That's the ISP, the IP, and the BC, a time to meet with the CCTLD. That would be great.
Good.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, I'll let him know.
Okay, great. And Glenn, I will get this off to you in one tiny nanosecond.
Thanks so much, Marilyn.
Yep.
Great. Thank you. Bye. Bye.